It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Thanks to a listener request, Cindy and DePier, if you're listening, we're talking about the Ukrainian humanitarian efforts of Door County Candle Company.
It's such an uplifting story, and how she got started and what they are doing and all of the people who are coming together to help out.
That Cindy last month pulled over on the side of the road to tell us she was on her way to Sturgeon Bay to volunteer in the blue and yellow candle making process. Join in 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Christiana Gorczynski-Trapani is owner of Door County Candle Company based in Sturgeon Bay. Christiana, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
So you have family connections in Ukraine. How are your loved ones doing with the Russian invasion going on over 4 months now?
I know, it's so hard to believe it's already been 4 months. They're okay. You know, what's so sad is like it's not any better over there. And it's still very much a big issue, and it's still very much real and still happening. And I think it hasn't been in the news quite as much as it was in the beginning, of course, you know, and my family are still just as scared and just as terrified. And luckily we still are able to communicate with them, but it's always fearful and nerve wracking when you go those few days not being able to hear from them. But luckily they're doing okay.
Did they have to leave the country, may I ask?
They tried in the beginning, but the borders were blocked by Russians, so they were actually unable to actually escape. But a few weeks, maybe in mid-March, a few of them were able to get to Poland, but the rest decided just to stay in Ukraine.
I imagine when the war started, you felt like you desperately needed to help. Can you tell us about what you started with your candles?
Absolutely. So, yeah, I mean, when it happened, I knew that I needed to do something, and it was just what can I do? And we actually had done a small little Ukraine candle fundraiser for a Ukrainian church in Chicago, and so we had the candle, and we had it made, we had the formula, and I thought, great, well, you know, we have something, let's use this, let's donate the profits from it to raise money for Ukraine, and it's the way that we can do something here to help. And that's how the idea started.
And meanwhile, you've had orders pouring in. Can you give us an update?
Yeah. So I love that pouring in. We had.
Oh my gosh! I didn't even get the pun. Yes.
I was going to say that was good. That was a good one.
Okay, I'm alert. I am with it. Go ahead.
We had in March alone, we had so many. I mean, I feel like we had maybe close to 20,000 orders in just a week in March, because we were on World News twice and PBS NewsHour in a week. So we had so many come in that week in March that it was wonderful. I mean, so many people wanted to support the cause. And we're still having orders come in. We have about 7,000 orders to still ship. But we have shipped over close to like 28,000 orders to date. So we're really proud of that, because, you know, we're not a big candle shop at all. So we really had to grow quickly for this.
Wow. And you, I would imagine, have to really either staff up or find volunteers and think about all the materials that go into the candles. How did you manage all of that workflow?
Oh, my gosh. Well, volunteers. We simply could not do it without our volunteers. Like, it's just not, it wouldn't be possible. As I'm doing this interview, a volunteer who came in this morning at 6:45, her name's Leslie. She comes in, she helps us pack the orders. We just have so many amazing volunteers, and I cannot say enough how much they have helped. And without them, we truly would not have been able to do this fundraiser. It just wouldn't be possible.
Christiana, if someone hasn't seen the candle yet, can you give us a visual of what it looks like?
Yeah, of course. So it is blue and yellow, so the colors of the Ukrainian flag. So it is a two-colored candle. It takes us about 2.5 days to make. So the bottom is yellow, and then blue is on the top. And then it's in a really nice glass jar, and then the label says Ukraine on it.
And it's a rather large candle. This would burn for many hours, I would imagine.
Yeah, it's around like 72 hours. And it's a lovely smell of vanilla. One of our employees here says it smells like a big warm hug during difficult times. And I think that's a great way to describe the fragrance of it.
What did your family members in Ukraine think when you sent pictures of it?
They were so touched, and just so grateful that we were doing something here to help everyone in Ukraine. And my aunt, when I told her about it, she was just in tears and just constantly just saying how proud she is. And it means a lot knowing that so far away, we can do something to help and also make my family proud and know that everyone there, that we're all standing behind them.
We're talking with Christiana Gorchinski-Trapani, owner of Door County Candle Company in Sturgeon Bay, their efforts on Ukraine relief and making just tens of thousands of candles and orders coming in by the day. You can join in on Ukraine efforts that you've done locally in your community. Maybe you've helped out in the candle making effort in Door County. Join in 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@wpr.org. So now that you have, you know, sold all of these candles, what are you hearing from customers about why they buy candles and support relief efforts?
Oh, yeah. You know, the stories are incredible of all the people near and far who have gotten these candles. And they all say, you know, some people call it the hope candle. And I just think it's incredible. Everyone has been telling me how this candle is a sign of hope and light for them. And some people are waiting to light theirs until the war is over. And some people pray with them. Some people bring them to church. Some people, I mean, the stories are truly beautiful. And so it means so much to so many people. And I even had one customer email and say that she saw the candle arrive. She jumped in excitement and she was so excited to open it. She took it out and she held it and looked at it for 5 minutes. And just, it was just such a physical sign of that, you know, she made a difference and that so many people are coming together to make a difference. And that people who have that candle know that they were part of a big impact and that they continue to be part of a big impact that we're all making together.
That one flame candlelight, it can have such a moving impact, I think, on someone when you just see that single flame and know that there are so many more flames around.
Yes, exactly. And we had someone in Florida who had her candle in their condo window, and she messaged us and said that she looked out her window and she saw like four other windows and different buildings that had the Ukraine candle in the window. And I just found that to be so beautiful. And just that so many people are united and see this as a sign of hope and light. And I think that it's such a beautiful way to know that so many people are supporting this tragedy that happened in Ukraine, but that so many people are coming together. And it's incredible that a candle was able to do this. And I'm still just so, it's hard to put into words, you know, the feeling behind it.
Christiana Gorchinski-Trapani owns Door County Candle Company as we talk about their Ukraine candle and this grassroots effort to help the country in the war against Russia. Join in on this effort. Other ways you've helped Ukraine in these months since the invasion, 800-642-1234. Email ideas@wpr.org. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We check in on the Ukrainian-themed artisan candle-making efforts underway in Sturgeon Bay. When Ukraine was invaded by Russia, the business started selling the blue and yellow candle in solidarity to raise money for an emergency aid charity, and orders have been coming in ever since. Join in on this effort and what your local group has done for Ukraine. 800-642-1234. Christiana Gorchinski-Trapani owns Door County Candle Company and stays with us. Christiana, talk about the charity that you decided to send proceeds to and why you chose the particular charity, Rosam.
Absolutely. So actually, as of 2 days ago, we have donated $700,000 to date to Rosam for Ukraine. So Rosam for Ukraine is an incredible nonprofit organization, and they do so much to help those in Ukraine. So like some examples are they were able to all the donations get drones to drop medical supplies in areas that have been bombed and that they can't get into. They send over 70 pallets a week over to Ukraine with medical supplies, bandages, tourniquets, you name it, for what people need. They have medicine, insulin, all these items that are needed. They help families evacuate and get to safety. They have volunteers in Poland that go through the border, over the border to help in Ukraine. And it's, they're just an incredible organization. And what I love about them is that they're so transparent about how their donations are being used and how they are impacting the lives of those in Ukraine. And on their website, they publish a lot of information about this, which I love it because I think it shows people that how the donations are really truly making a difference in Ukraine. And I'm so passionate about all this because this organization is just incredible. And we actually were lucky enough to have one of the board members from Rosam visit the candle company a few weeks ago, and it was wonderful. And she's from Ukraine, and it was really nice to meet her and just talk about what we're doing. And she's able to see our candle and talk about the candle, talk about Rosam. And it was a really, really cool opportunity to actually meet them in person.
Oh, that's amazing that you were able to have that, you know, make that connection to the charity and that they could see firsthand the work that is going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, it was, and it was wonderful. And it was, when we met, we were like, we felt like long lost friends. And we actually, we were long lost friends. And it was just, it felt like a sense of home meeting each other. And that was very special.
Oh, that's so beautiful. Let's take a call now. Claire is joining us from Milwaukee. Claire, hi.
Hi.
What would you like to bring up?
Well, I'd like to share that one of the things that I've been doing is just making little pictures on like a quarter page size little sheet of paper and just little drawings because I think and they have like hearts and flowers and little symbols and things like that, because I think one of the things that in all of the logistics, we also, I think, keeping people's spirits up is really important. And so I send these little drawings to an aid agency in Poland for the refugees there.
Oh, wow. How long have you been doing this, Claire?
Since the first days of the war.
Wow. Wow. Well, thank you for sharing that. And I think it speaks to Christiana that, you know, even the little things can make a difference, can help, just knowing that you're showing that you're thinking of them and you're in solidarity.
Oh, yeah, that is beautiful. That is just such a beautiful idea.
What challenges have you faced ramping up production to meet demand? What has that been like? I would imagine volunteers stepped up, but you still have to find them and make sure that they're trained and can, you know, do the whole process.
Yeah.
Quality control.
We have faced many challenges. I think every day presents a new one, but we always are able to overcome it. The beginning, it was definitely having, you know, enough help and volunteers. And that's still today. I mean, we could always use as many volunteers as possible because they help make this happen. But so getting volunteers has, was in the beginning really hard, and still, you know, we're still looking for some. Also, our space was a huge constraint. We're just about a little over 3,000 square feet here. And we had to take up a fair amount of our retail store just to get more room to pack the candles. And we had to kind of shrink our store production dramatically. So now we just have one little table where we pour like our other candles, and everything else is devoted to the Ukraine candles. So we really had to, like, you know, figure out how to scale our business very quickly and in a small space. And of course, you know, there's been supply chain issues with everything. I mean, wax, jars, wicks, fragrance, color, everything. But luckily, we've been able to get the supplies we need. Some days are more stressful than others when it comes to these, like, you know, issues that arise, but we luckily been able to make it through.
How has inflation affected your business?
Oh yeah. I mean, prices in everything have gone up. I mean, our jars have tripled in price, and our wax has doubled in price. And that's been very difficult. And it's very much affected our business and everything, but we're still, you know, we're making them, and we're just trying to go with the flow every day as best we can. I always say we have to laugh or we will cry. So just had to laugh.
We're talking about the philanthropic work of Door County Candle Company with Christiana Gorchinsky-Trapani, owner of the candle company based in Sturgeon Bay. You can join in on Ukraine relief, what you have done, maybe questions you have about candle making. 800-642-1234. Christiana, in past months, I think you've had some organizations pretend to be your candle making mission, but they've been kind of like fakes or imposters. Is that still an issue?
You know, it is not as bad as it was in March, but we definitely had imposters. There was one business in particular that was really like, you know, bidding on our name on Google and trying to, you know, get in the way of, I think the real point here is donating money and supporting Ukraine. And so we had a lot of customers calling us very upset because they got their candle and it was just a white pillared candle with a little picture of the Ukrainian flag. And we had a fair amount of these, and we had to kind of walk through that with them that this is not our candle. And if they want to, you know, purchase our candle, this is how. And we've had some people call us upset that they, you know, Venmo'd and PayPal'd for our candles. And we always have to say the only way to get our candles are through our website. So I always feel terrible when that happens. And I try to walk through, you know, with them how to get our candle. But yeah, that was a big issue in the middle of March. And it still is, which was upsetting because from what I saw, those businesses weren't donating anything from those sales. At least if they were, at least there's benefits still being, you know, had there. But that was definitely a big one of those bigger issues we had.
100% though of your proceeds on your candle are going to the relief effort. That's right.
Yep. 100% of our profits are going right to Dasm.
Do you have a donation goal in mind, or how long?
Yes, okay. I definitely do. I want to get to $1 million in a donation. That is my goal. That is my goal. And I know we can get there. Yes, but that is my goal.
Do you think you will ever be able to visit your homeland again? I know that's a deeply personal question.
Yes, I will. It won't be what it was, which is heartbreaking, because when we go to Ukraine, it won't be what it was, but we will, I look forward to going there again, or going there. We were supposed to go before COVID, and it's really sad we weren't able to go because of what happened. So I look forward to going there when we can. And it's really sad. It won't be what it was, but Ukraine will survive this, and we will get through it. And I do look forward to being able to visit there.
Well, one of your volunteers called in, couldn't stay with us, Cindy in De Pere, who originally tipped us off on this. And Cindy wants to know. That's so great. Cindy wants to know, what's the process of making candles? Do you need more volunteers? How do people sign up?
Yes, excellent. Well, Cindy's one of our amazing volunteers, so I just want to say thank you, Cindy. So to sign up, we just ask if you can email us at info@doorcountycandle.com with your name and phone number. And our volunteer coordinator, which is my mom, will get back to you and schedule a time. And the process of making candles, I'll make it quick, but it's a 2.5-day process. It is all very handmade and hand done. So from putting the wicks in the jars to pouring, to cleaning, to labeling, every single bit is done by hand. So it's an incredible process, and we're really proud of the handcrafted artisan nature of it. It might take a little longer, but we are really proud of the product that we create.
So in that, you said over 2 days, I think there was a picture of the candle being poured out of like a vat. I mean, it was huge. How big are some of these? Yeah, go ahead.
So we melt our tank in like 150 pounds, or maybe they're more than that, 200 pounds vats. So we have like four really large wax tanks that just melt the wax. Mm. And we're constantly just refilling it with big wax blocks. And we just, we're actually using pancake basters currently, and to use that to pour wax into candles. And it's actually made the process faster and decreased the drippage on the candles for cleaning. Cindy could definitely attest to that if she's still listening, because she she was in the beginning cleaning candles when they were super messy and took like 3 minutes a candle to clean, and now it's a lot quicker. But yeah, we've evolved a lot, and our wax pouring machines are actually old coffee pots.
Oh,
so
it's
pretty fun what we've been able to use and make this happen.
Oh, Christiana, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for caring about this and sharing it. And thanks to Cindy and everyone. And it was a pleasure being on today.
Christiana Gorchinski-Trapani, owner of Door County Candle Company in Sturgeon Bay. News update is next on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We discuss the latest now on Capitol Hill with U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin of Wisconsin. She joined with her Democratic colleagues this week, signing on to the Freedom to Travel for Healthcare Act. We'll discuss reproductive legislation in the aftermath of Roe. Straight away with your questions to join in, 800-642-1234. Senator Baldwin, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
It's a pleasure to join you.
So when Roe was reversed 3 weeks ago, you said women will now have fewer rights than their mothers and grandmothers have had for decades. What is the path forward for Democrats who feel pressure to codify Roe and for Congress to pass a law that would provide the same protections that Roe did?
You know, I think we're taking an all of the above approach. We have brought for a vote my Women's Health Protection Act, which would not only codify Roe, but would prevent states from taking the sort of measures they've enacted for years now to really constrict that right. but the filibuster prevented us from passing that. And we are now really focusing on things like the Freedom to Travel for Healthcare Act. This morning or afternoon, we will be asking for a vote on that. That would allow women in a state like Wisconsin that has an existing law criminalizing people who perform abortions, it would allow people to travel across state lines to access health care and make sure that neither the provider nor the individual would be subject to those criminal laws. We will continue to highlight the incredibly high stakes that are, you know, going to be really literally on the ballot this fall. Mm. And so there's a, you know, as I said, it's an all of the above approach.
On the day Roe was overturned, your colleague Joe Manchin of West Virginia had a statement saying he'd support legislation that would codify the rights of Roe v. Wade, previously protected. Are you working with him on what that looks like?
We have been working collectively on that issue. The I think the real problematic part of this is that it is not enough to codify Roe versus Wade, because we know in so many states there have been state laws passed that really limit access to abortion care and comprehensive reproductive rights, including in Wisconsin. And if you don't also address those laws, codifying Roe versus Wade will not necessarily in certain states allow access to comprehensive reproductive rights.
This abortion travel vote that you're preparing to see action on in the House and Senate here, you know, protecting a person's ability to cross state lines to seek reproductive care. I think it's the House side that clarifies the protections for interstate commerce on abortion pills, and I'm not sure if that's in the Senate's version. Are there legal dangers around the movement of out-of-state abortion medication, and what would this, you know, Travel for Healthcare Act do about that?
The bill that we are going to be trying to debate this afternoon is really narrowly focused on travel, but we will shortly be taking up measures that deal with other aspects of this, you know, very, very consequential Supreme Court decision overturning five decades of precedent. I can't emphasize enough that this means that in Wisconsin, where we revert to a law that was passed in 1849, and say to a whole generation of women that you have fewer freedoms than your mother and your grandmother, this is so consequential. And just like the folks who have been working for overturning Roe versus Wade for decades, we have a long fight ahead of us. And so, yes, we will be looking at legislation around medicinal abortion, freedom to travel, but there's many, many other aspects of this. For example, data brokers who are who track people's whereabouts and can sell data of, were you in a parking lot adjacent to a Planned Parenthood? This is a really significant effort.
I'm going to reintroduce you here as we talk with U.S. Democratic Senator Tammy Baldwin on reproductive rights, the latest legislation connected to the reversal of Roe v. Wade, and the conversations and bills moving on Capitol Hill. You can join in 800-642-1234. Senator, Governor Evers and Attorney General Josh Call last month filed a lawsuit against the state's 1849 law that bans most abortions, as you mentioned. And here's Attorney General Call at a news conference announcing the lawsuit.
This law was passed well before women had the right to vote. It was passed before the Civil War. It uses terminology that is outdated and leaves doctors and others uncertain.
Do you support the lawsuit?
Absolutely. The idea that women in Wisconsin are, you know, seeing the clock turn back to the 19th century is stunning. Of all the states, we have the oldest abortion law, and I can tell you there were no women in the legislature in that session in 1849, sort of informing the debate. There were no women even voting for legislators in that session of the state legislature. So, this is very disturbing. And I have to say, all credit to Governor Tony Evers, who upon the Supreme Court decision in Dobbs said, we have to hold a special session of the legislature to deal with this. And the legislative leaders, the Republicans in the Wisconsin legislature, you know, gaveled in and gaveled out without taking any action.
Attorney General Josh Call has said he won't enforce our 1849 ban, not prosecute abortion cases or go after them. What is your advice to attorneys general and DAs that seek to fight these abortion bans?
Well, certainly they ought to be doing it, but look at the reality on the ground for women. In the meantime, we don't have any providers in Wisconsin because, you know, we have a law that would criminalize the abortion procedure and criminalize subject to prosecution, doctors and nurses. And so the reality for women in Wisconsin is they have to leave the state to go to a state that does provide abortion care. And that's just untenable. We need to make sure that in America, a woman's freedom to control her own body, to plan for a family, and to seek health care does not depend on what state she resides in.
This is adjacent question. Some court reform ideas that Senate Democrats are mulling over or being talked about: expanding the Supreme Court, imposing term limits on justices, requiring the High Court to adopt a code of ethics to give more transparency. Of these things, what do you support or oppose?
You know, again, at this point in time, we're looking at an all of the above approach. It is untenable in the United States in the 21st century that women have, gone back a half century in terms of the precedent of Roe versus Wade, and in Wisconsin, a lot longer than that, because of our 1849 law. It's also in such conflict with the values of American people, where overwhelmingly they support a woman's freedom to control when and whether to have a family, her body, her access to health care.
I just want to pause here and take a call. Ricky is joining us from Sheboygan, Senator. Ricky, go ahead.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I just wanted to kind of ask, and as I was telling them, I don't mean to call somebody out by name. However, what do you feel is the likelihood of the ban being appealed or some of these other protections that you mentioned you were working on being able to get passed in the state of Wisconsin, with like Robin Voss being so vocally opposed and so many people almost saying that they're devoting all of their time to make sure the ban stays? And it's just very concerning living in the state of Wisconsin to see such strong opposition and the worry of anything really being able to get done.
Ricky, thanks for the call, Senator.
We have to use our voices and our votes. And I think that we should all view Roe versus Wade to be on the ballot this fall. And we should look at whether each of the individuals that are on our ballots are standing by women's freedom to control their own reproductive, choices, or whether they stand in opposition to that. And frankly, it's so sad that this is partisan. It used to be that there was a very broad bipartisan support for the Roe versus Wade decision. That's no longer the case, but we need to be very active citizens, and that is, let's say democracy is not a spectator sport; it's a participatory sport, and we have to get out there and vote. So That's what I'd say to Ricky, is not only you, but everybody who cares deeply about women's freedom, we need to vote in folks who stand by our freedoms.
Lori, now in Shano, before we move on to the next topic, Lori, go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, I remember years ago, OBGYNs were not wanting to deliver babies because they would get sued because of injury. And now with this, because states have so many different laws on this, how much are they going to be penalized now? And with so these people think that they are saving all these lives, but yet what's going to happen with all these kids that, because they're going to be older mothers who are going to have kids that have Down syndrome and other issues, younger kids like 10 years old getting raped, they're going to be by, you know, a family member, they're going to have kids that are, you know, not right because physically, emotionally because of incest.
And because we're short on time, Lori, Senator Baldwin, what are the repercussions here?
Lori is right that there are many, many repercussions. Women's lives and health care and reproductive health will be put at jeopardy. And I think Lori's initial question was, what do people in the obstetrics and gynecology profession going to do because they're subject to prosecution under Wisconsin's 1849 abortion law? They're not going to be able to do what is medically recommended and will have to turn folks away or recommend that they leave the state for the care that they need. That's untenable. I've heard from OB-GYNs from across the state saying we have no clarity on when we can actually follow what is the best medical care for our patients. So we have to err on the side of not providing care. And that's unacceptable.
Congresswoman Tammy Baldwin stays with us. Join in on your priorities on gun policy agenda, where we go next. Your response to Congress on the January 6th investigation as you've watched it unfold this summer. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Senator Baldwin here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin of Wisconsin on the line for a few more minutes as we get in a question on gun policy. President Biden heralding the passage of the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act. Senator, there's polling out from Pew that says Americans are largely supportive of the gun law passed by Congress and signed into law, but most Americans are not optimistic it will do much. What is next for the federal government to regulate guns?
Well, first of all, this Safer Communities Act ended, you know, approximately 30 years of inaction on gun safety. And I think increased the confidence that Congress can act on gun safety measures in the wake of just so many devastating tragedies in our country. But yes, there is absolutely more to do. And so we want to make sure that the Safer Communities Act, which supports states who enact red flag laws, that closes the so-called boyfriend loophole, that invests in mental health care and enhances the review process for gun buyers who are under 21 years of age. All of these need to be implemented. And then we need to be very exacting about what additional action needs to be taken.
Well, Senator Baldwin, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Democratic U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin of Wisconsin. She has been in the Senate since 2012. Now we turn to Wisconsin Public Radio's Capital Bureau Chief Sean Johnson for analysis. Sean, welcome back.
Hi, Kate.
Hi. Getting your thoughts there on Senator Baldwin and her approach to the reversal of Roe v. Wade and the legislation that's circulating on Capitol Hill. What are your takeaways?
I mean, I think what you hear from Senator Baldwin is a message similar to what you're hearing from Democrats across the country right now. I mean, none of them would have wanted Roe to be overturned. It's something that they worried about for years, decades. But now that it is overturned, it may be that pushing for abortion rights in the year 2022 is their best political strategy in a year that historically favors Republicans.
What type of momentum do they have, though, when you look at their legislation, whether it's the travel vote, which it looks like it will be getting some action here quite shortly? Do you think that they have the votes?
I everything in the U.S. Senate tends to hinge on the ability to get 60 votes. And, you know, in the case of the one proposal that Senator Baldwin mentioned to begin the interview, the Women's Health Protection Act, which she co-sponsored, that received a vote in the Senate earlier this year after the leaked draft opinion of Roe came out, and it failed. And in fact, it didn't get every Democrat on board. Senator Joe Manchin voted no. So there's certainly an uphill climb to passing new laws in the Senate, even though Democrats right now control Washington, but kind of by a thread.
What are you watching for on the local level here in state politics following the Roe decision?
Well, I mean, you talked about that lawsuit that was filed by Attorney General Josh Call that was filed in Dane County Circuit Court. And so we're going to see how that plays out in the court system. It makes a couple of arguments. First, that after Roe, Wisconsin passed a series of laws to regulate lawful abortion that are directly inconsistent with that 1849 ban. And then also that the law could be invalidated because it hasn't been used in the 50 years since Roe was decided. Mm-hmm. So we'll be watching to see what happens at the lower court level and then eventually the state Supreme Court.
Sean, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Kate.
Sean Johnson, WPR State Capitol Bureau Chief, building on our conversation with U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.